Hello and happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to the New York Times podcast. This is John Caramonica. We are off with our turkeys this week. We'll be back in full next week, but we don't want to leave you without something to listen to. We are presenting a vintage throwback. In this case, we're going to listen to the Life of Pablo podcast from February when Kanye dropped his most recent album. Hope you enjoy.
We don't want no devils in the house, God.
Yes,
we want the Lord.
Yes.
We don't want no devils in the house. It's the New York Times podcast.
Yes.
Jesus
praise the Lord.
Yes, sir.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
We want the Lord.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I'm trying to keep my faith.
We on a ultralight beam. We on a ultralight beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything.
We on an ultralight beam. Here with me today, we have Matthew Trammell from The New Yorker.
What's up? How you doing, folks?
Justin Charity from Complex.
What's good, John?
And our very own pop music reporter, Joe Goscarelli.
I'm here.
Yeah, you are. We are here to talk about Kanye West, clearly. A lot of things have happened in Kanye. It feels weird to say we're here to talk about a Kanye West album, because that's not really the only reason we're here. The last 2 weeks have... for Kanyeologists have been just a font of incredible things. For context, The Life of Pablo, which is a Kanye West record, was released sort of in a way on Tidal, sort of in a way last week. That happened a few
days.
Check
your bank statements.
Yes. I mean, you know, I have a credit card charge for it. I possess a download of it.
Tithings.
I think a lot of people.
Tithings.
It's a true story. You know, definitely it all goes to the church. That happened. A few days before that, there was a show at Madison Square Garden, which was part listening party, part fashion show for Yeezy Season 3. There has also been all kinds of ephemera. There has been a very, very active Twitter account. There have been leaked recordings, both of demos and of backstage rants. There's a lot happening in the world of Kanye West. Let's start with the album, though. Where were you guys on Saturday night when the album actually officially came out? Were you fervently sitting at your computers waiting on it? Like, what was the vibe?
I was in the club. I was at Kinfolk, and people were trying to buy the album,
like on their phones.
Yeah, like oh, like
how
I
did
have,
that work out for
yeah.
them?
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean it worked. I guess
someone
I don't know.
Got it?
I had like someone had it. Like I don't like I got I downloaded Tidal. Started the trial, you know, like went through it, but yeah.
Shout out to Kendall Jenner. Yeah. Hasn't downloaded Tidal yet.
Yeah.
Justin Charity?
I was asleep, which means I am washed. I am the washed member of the podcast today. So I was asleep and I woke up. I woke up early Sunday. I woke
up
at
like
6 o'clock.
Yes.
And realized that the album was out, which means that my first experience with the album was Sunday morning listening to
Ultralight Beam
and Kirk Franklin
going to church
and Kanye West, right?
Like, well, frankly, like most Sunday mornings
right.
for you,
right? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, Joe, where were you?
I was on my couch. I watched SNL.
Yeah,
I watched SNL with a group. Everyone dispersed. Everyone went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I refreshed Tidal like over and over yes. and over and over again until something appeared.
Mm-hmm.
Put my credit card info in. Got no download.
Have you called your credit card provider to see if there's a charge? Like just to see?
I was charged.
You worked.
I was also refunded.
Okay, fair enough.
Thank you, Tidal. Great customer service.
Yeah,
Took a couple of days, but it's been a busy week. So.
Fair enough.
So I was just rewatching the Chance performance over and over again until
that happened.
Until I could hear the album myself.
Yeah. No, I had a very similar experience where I was sitting at home after Saturday Night Live and. You know, all the texts started coming in like, it's now. You know, he's on television, and then I get a couple texts, and it's like, now, go now. Mm-hmm. And then all you hear is like, peace, this Yasin.
You're like, do I have to wait to the end?
Yeah.
Does it unlock?
How many times do we have to listen to the most epic? A thing that I like about these kind of fumbled releases is it creates an event. It creates something that's, for people like us that are really passionate, it creates a moment for us to really, like, congeal around. And I think that's something that is dissipating in our era. So I like that. But the thing I don't like about it is the sort of instantaneity of critical consensus, because I feel like even by Sunday afternoon when my piece went up, I feel like there was already a kind of like there's reviews in the world, there are people out there talking. Do you guys feel like your response to the album now X amount of days later is the same as it was when you first listened to it.
I don't know if MSG is included when you when you say but mm-hmm. like it was very like intentional on his part to for like the first time people heard it to be like completely removed from any sort of like headphone speakers mm-hmm. like kind of situation, like this whole like kind of just like sonic experience that MSG was, like the fact that it was like in a stadium with like people talking and with him on a mic and with like breaks where he's like queuing up the next song. I felt like all of that was a part of like how transparent he was trying to be with the process.
It may have been the loudest I've ever listened to music.
Right, right. And mm-hmm. at the same time,
any kind.
Mm-hmm. What was really surreal about it is that like just exactly like you said, like it's like MSG speakers, you know, and then in the dead time between songs, like you've never been in an arena that was like that quiet. Like you could like people would yell and he would like hear them.
Right.
You know, and like the lights were still up and it was just like how. Like,
yeah, the lights being up.
There was like no sense of like real dimensions to what the space actually was, like as far as how big it was, how small it was. But, you know, that being said, like by the time I actually had the record like on my phone and was able to like be on the train and like listen to it and like over and over and over again, it was like, oh, wow, like this is way more cohesive and way more sort of like deliberate and intentional and designed than like any sort of lead up to this would have indicated.
Yeah.
You know, which makes me think like how much of this was like how much of this was like by design, how much of this was like the sort of like dance puppets kind of like, you know.
But that's what's interesting about Kanye is he has this way of making happenstance things feel really official.
Right.
Because even if you listen like on a very, very close lyrical level, like there's references on the record to things that happened like mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, Black China.
Yeah, Black China and Rob. Like there's just stuff where he's like, we Black just left Rob that also. On 30. We just left that MSG.
Yeah, exactly.
Like literally
yeah,
just left.
Right, right, right.
So Kanye has this way, and this I think was true of Yeezus as well, where stuff was coming together in this very, very slapdash way, but he clearly has the sort of authority of vision and the cohesion that he's able to like stitch that into something. That's
but
very,
that's a
very
real
thoughtful.
Creative person thing, right? Where, you know, maybe you write the album in 7 days, but the years before that,
right.
when you're procrastinating, when you're throwing out ideas, like that's the work too.
Shouts to my editors.
shouts
to anyone I've ever filed late to.
Right.
So I'm sympathetic in that regard, but what I took away from the record is it felt very piecemeal, but all the pieces felt like they were coming from the same place. Obviously, we started with Ultralight Beam, which I think is just like beyond magical as a song. Like, talk to me a little bit about your vibes on Ultralight Beam. Devil, Angel, where
my,
we at?
You know what? My immediate, and I'm thinking back to the live performance at Madison Square,
mm-hmm.
like the first third of the record, and certainly Ultralight Beams made me think, we're going to listen to Surf meets Yeezus, and this is going to be incredible. And it's, you know, I think at Madison Square, I was like, these song structures seem really complex and convoluted, mm-hmm. arguably. Because when I say I listened to that album for the first time on a Sunday morning, my roommate Leslie wasn't home, so I connected. I mean, it's like at that point 6:30 in the morning, and I connected my subwoofer and everything up,
mm-hmm.
and blasted The Life of Pablo at 6:30 on a Sunday morning,
mm-hmm.
at appropriate volume.
Sure.
And I sort of got the sense that like, and I think you said this maybe not in your review of the album, but elsewhere, you made a point of like Kanye sort of treating people like sections of a symphony.
Yeah.
And that's very much what it felt like to me. Because I guess at Madison Square, you know, I sort of went into it a bit shook. Because to me, the prospect of hearing rap music of all genres of music for the first time
mm-hmm.
at a live venue
mm-hmm.
was like, I don't know that I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I didn't really get the sense of like, oh, all of the, like the Dream and Kirk Franklin and Chance and Kanye mm-hmm. himself and all these people, and Post Malone for the six mm-hmm. bars that he's on the record. All these people are just instruments, and the album has movements. And as much as like Kanye West can be a charming songwriter, that's probably just like the least important component of this album.
It is, and I think lyricism, it's really, really striking to hear Kanye under rap. Because I feel like for so many years we've been acclimated to hearing him over-rap,
yeah.
and then hearing him tell you about how he used to over-rap. And even on this record, there's that line where he's like, you know, a young producer just trying to get his flows off. And like when you think of like Kanye from like 2003 or whatever to 2010 even, all you can think of is like he's just trying to tell you how good he can write. He's just like trying to prove his point. And there are moments on this record where I was like, it's almost like he's trying to pull a Future in a weird way, where he's just like, I'm just dabbing syllables here.
You definitely
there.
Get that at the end of 30 Hours, the part where Andre 3000 starts humming and he's sort of doing these. It's like he's drafting verses and scrapping them
in
real time.
Yeah, just in pockets. He's just dropping stuff in pockets.
And this is something he also started on Yeezus, which is like seeding the floor entirely and using people, as you say, as instruments and collaging. Like, and I think he, you know, he did it like Hold My Liquor, for instance. You know, like Chief Keef is like the greatest synthesizer of all time that he just laid over that. And then you get, you know, Assassin, and you get these little bits of dance hall. And on this, on Pablo, I think like he's taken that to a new level, and he's, you know, he has Chance, who is like secret weapon.
Oh my God.
Like unparalleled at this moment. And then, you know, he'll throw in the Rihanna, the Sister Nancy. Like, it's just
Kelly Price.
Kelly Price. It's just, and you're just like, you feel like every time a new song hits, you like run into the wall, but then like it just feels so good, you know? And then it's, and then it's the next one.
And also, what's interesting is like you think about the whole, like the Hawaii sessions and how he brought everybody into one room. And I always felt like the album that came out of that was everybody coming to make Kanye sound a certain way. This feels almost the opposite, where it's Kanye basically being like, I would love to sound like Kelly Price, but there's literally no way in hell I could sound like Kelly Price. I'm just going to go get a Kelly Price. And if you read the Fader interview with her, you know, it all seemed very sort of like thrown together in last minute, but like, you want a Kelly Price, you don't get the budget. You don't get the budget version, you get the real thing. I was thinking a lot also about, you know, he kept calling this a gospel album, which Kanye shrugged. Like, I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. But like, you listen to Ultralight Beam and you're like, I don't know. If I was like Ty Jabret or Jonathan McGrell, like any of these gospel guys, I'd be hella pissed that wasn't on my record. You saw like Kirk Franklin's Instagram post about getting all kinds of flack for working on the record. Any of you guys listen to a lot of gospel? I was emailing with Doreen a little bit last night to see if she wanted to come and talk about gospel. But
not
since
like the mid-aughts. Yeah, not
jamming that Tone back in the day.
Yeah. Does Kanye listen to a lot of gospel?
I'm not entirely. I feel like he maybe grew up
like,
around.
I feel
it.
Like it's an interesting music to try to engage with, because it's like a, I don't know. It's like it has a, like a utility. It has like a specific social use, right? Like I guess all genres of music do, but like it's not a, you know, it's commercial kind of secondary. It's so interesting to hear on Pablo, like, you know, something like Lowlights, it really is. And when he talked about that record or tweeted about it, at least, he was like, you know, I was just thinking about all the moms like driving their kids to school. And that's really like, you get in a cab at the right time, like on the right day, and you get the right driver, and you'll just hear some gospel or you'll hear like a sermon on the radio, and you had no plan for that to sort of enter your day, but then there it is, you know what I mean? And that's sort of the sensation that I got, like hitting that. That's like one of my like favorite songs on the album, and it's like he's not on it, you know what I mean? And it's just like creating a kind of packaging gospel in this way that it's just like not supposed to be packaged. Like there's this weird sort of like progressive, very like palatable like beat and like music and sound around, like under this woman who's just talking about like completely handing herself over to Jesus Christ, which is not a universal message. Not everyone's a Christian, but the music is like
universal
completely
music.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I thought that was like, it seems like it should be more obvious than it really ends up being, you know, or it's more like, it's like a duh moment. Like, how is this not?
And I think the gospel is sort of laced through the album in that way that you're talking about, where, you know, you'll have dark stuff, like you'll have Feedback, you'll have Freestyle 4, and even like something like FML, which is like maybe there's, it's religious in spirit, but it's also dark and it's tortured. But it again sort of leads me back to Yeezus, where like you had this whole punishing experience and then the cloud sort of part, and then you get Bound 2 at the end.
Yep.
And I think he's sort of doing that in smaller bursts over and over again on this album.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only thing that I remember really that bummed me out about Bound 2 on Yeezus was this feeling of like, I don't know if this is meant to be an answer to everything that's come before it. I don't know if this is like a holdover from some other thing. It didn't feel like it had, it felt strong on its own, but it lacked kind of narrative context in the framework of the album. And I think what's happening here is the interlacing is much, much more intense. And again, I like to think it's intentional. I mean, maybe it's just like oh no, like the record's due in 2 days and like we just got to throw together what we got. But like I like to think it's intentional.
But the, you know what? The challenge of incorporating gospel and just like the musicality of being a church choir or of just being a preacher, right? Of talking in the cadences mm-hmm. that black pastors talk in. Mm-hmm. That stuff is interesting enough to incorporate into this album that the parts of the album that get away from that almost bum me out a little bit. Mm. Like the song Waves or the song mm-hmm. Fade. Like those mm-hmm. things are enough of a departure from what I think is the most interesting like challenge of incorporation that the album has. And so I guess the question, sort of playing off of what I was saying and what you were saying before about this album as a big orchestration,
yeah.
I guess the question I have is, like, is the – I feel like the orchestra is maybe too big, and I don't know if anyone else came away with
well,
that.
Well, on that note, do you consider the bonus tracks part of the album? I mean, what is an album? But, like, does this album go Ultralight Beam to Wolves mm-hmm. or 30 Hours, No Parties? Like, are those part of this piece?
In my mind, they're part of the piece, but I can see the contention where they wouldn't be. But, you know – this is so situational because my title download was successful and all of this did come on the title download. Mm-hmm. So like in my mind, it's all part of one record, but I can see
except
how it's
Fade. Did you get Fade?
No,
in
no. I had
download?
To find no because Fade was the same. It was Fax
twice.
Right. So I did have to go track down Fade the next day, unfortunately. but for me, it is all one piece. Do you guys experience it that way?
Yeah, I've recognized the impulse to sort of like put that like marker there, like especially the way Wolves ends.
It seems like he's finishing a thought.
Yeah, like yeah. It feels like it's like everything is sort of like zipped up. But then of course, like sonically, all the production and you know, it can't be overstated that like Kanye West like is a producer, and we mm-hmm. have to like put into context the fact that like they're really, you know, hip hop has been around for like 4 decades. There really hasn't been 4 decades of producers rapping and making rap albums. So like when we think about this, like, you know, you compare it to like producer albums and then you start to like see a little bit more of like the point that we keep returning to about him using people and artists as instruments.
Yes.
Like the idea of a producer's album is like there are going to be a bunch of artists that are going to come and be on like Big Cap and Funk Flex's album or like Dr. Dre's album or right. whoever it is, you know, and then that sort of starts to, you know, it's more of a useful comparison. But conceptually, I think from track one to cover Saint and Lamb's Wool, We're Surrounded by the Fucking Wolves is like the narrative that I think he was talking about when he was like, this is the life of like a person and this is like a story, da, da, da. Like I look at that as like, you know, the words that I'm supposed to be looking for to piece that story together.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like, you know, how could you leave 30 Hours off the album?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. 30
like,
Hours
how could you not,
and
you know,
No Parties
like,
are like
yeah.
two of the best moment for moment songs mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in the whole collection.
But they're also, what's interesting is 30 Hours and No More Parties are very much, in my mind, narrative Kanye 1.0 or 2.0. Not this 6.0 or 7.0, I'm just saying words. And sometimes not saying words. I was listening to the album again on the way in, and there are at least 3 songs where he goes,
And in the leaked demos, they're all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I have a working theory, which I was telling Joe about before we came on the podcast today, which is, I wonder if this album, depending how much more fractured, I mean, maybe it'll become more fragmented over the next few days. There'll be more demos leaked, etc. But I wonder if we're going to need to start thinking about this album and maybe Kanye in general, almost like Prince in a way, where it's like you're comparing 6 versions of songs, like you're hearing demos, you're hearing ideas, mm-hmm. you're starting to like, you're seeing these things as works in progress. Because the more I listen to Pablo, the more I experience it as a work in progress. And that's not to say that I don't think it's a great album or I don't think it's a finished album, but it does feel incomplete and strategically incomplete.
I mean, that's been the main messaging around it
yes.
since like before we heard. The first thing we learned about it was that it's called this, but I might change the name, but this is what it's called now.
Right.
And so it's like you even look at that and you're like, okay, how much did you know? We only know what, like, you're sort of, like, tweeting from, like, your, like, Kanye heavens. But, mm-hmm. like, how much did you know? Did you know that you were going to end up on, like, The Life of Pablo this entire time? You know what I mean? Like,
do you think so?
Like, that, well, I'm just saying, like, well, yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, yeah. like, when you open the door to exposing process in yep. that way, which is, like, I think the most valuable thing about what the internet did for music, you know what I mean, is like the process became so much more transparent. Like when you like embrace that and you're like, the process is going to be a part of it. Naming an album is something that artists do every day that fans never see. You know, like the albums changing names and stuff. So not never, but much more rarely. Like that was like sort of like an integral, probably like the main campaign for this album was that the name kept changing.
And he's made a point, you know, of showing you that process now after too by putting the credits up. Like, you know, he gave everyone a minute to listen to the album and then there were the credits. And by my eyes, the credits keep changing too. So who knows where this thing ends up.
Yeah, I didn't realize Joe told me earlier that the Frank Ocean is apparently no longer in the credits of Wolves, which I had not realized.
I don't know where the CDQ of Wolves, Sia, Vic Mensa, like, Hive. I don't know how that started. I'm very perplexed by it.
Well, didn't it start? It started during Yeezy Season 2.
I know, really that's
song. It's just weird that that's how the lifespan of that
people
Hive,
spent,
so.
Like, a year, like, where's Frank Ocean? Where's Frank Ocean? He appears magically at the end of the Old Testament.
Right.
And then people are like, oh, actually, wait, like.
And then Kanye tweets, like, I'm a fixed wolf.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, did we all hear the same two versions of this? Like, you know, I don't know, though. I don't know.
Shouts to Vic Mensa. It was kind of crickets a little bit for him when he put the aux, when he got the aux cord at MSG. That was unfortunate.
It's hard to follow Thug, to be fair.
It's hard to follow Thug.
But, like, it's hard to follow Kanye. Yeah. And Thug followed Kanye with, like, no discernible drop in quality. And then Vic Mensa got the plug, and then it was just, like, people started going for the
They load. Picked up Nori, and they were like, all right, that's it. No. Let's head backstage.
Lamar Odom was like, it's a wrap. Yeah, it's done. All right, so what are some other songs that jump out to people? I mean, obviously, I Love Kanye is special, but it's not. It's so Kanye. As it is. But, like, are there other songs that really jump out at you, either positively or negatively?
I was surprised to hear Chris Brown on the album.
Yeah.
Was he on the notepad? I didn't see him on the notepad.
I don't know if he was on the notepad.
I don't remember him being on the notepad after staring at the notepad for too many news posts about the notepad, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he was on the notepad.
It was a shock to me. I think he sounds great.
Yeah.
As good as he's ever sounded, maybe. But, which Kanye does with most people.
Yes. But I guess if Chris Brown could be on a Rihanna record... He can be on a Kanye record.
Shout out to Post Malone for hitting those notes on Fade. for hitting some of the best notes on the album on Fade. Shouts out to the kick drum on Fade. Okay. Some of the drums on the album, I think.
Do we think that Post placement is quid pro quo for playing Kylie's birthday?
Dark arts. Dark arts. Is Seacrest getting a piece
of
that?
I'm just pulling the curtain back.
That could be a Seacrest organized thing.
I really love the, and lots of people have talked about this, but Father Stretch My Hands Part 2, which is, and I guess we should talk about this a bit. So it is a song called Panda by a Brooklyn rapper called Designer, who sounds decidedly like Future on this record.
That's not Future?
Here we go.
I'm excited for the mixtape.
The ad lib's the best part of that song. But
that song is amazing.
Talk that talk,
Justin. But it's crazy that, right, it's just sort of Kanye layers some vocals between the hooks of that song, and sort of, he doesn't really remake the song, but he so radically alters the context of hearing that song, hearing it, like, immediately after a Chance the Rapper verse Kirk Franklin talking about the spirit moving you. And I don't know, it makes me feel really good every time I listen to it. And shouts out to Designer. I know people are going to not want to like this song because of the idea of the song basically being a Future song by somebody who has no business sounding like Future.
But it's undeniable record.
But it's an undeniable record.
Do you think we'll hear more from him on Good Music in the future, or is this a
I think so.
But like a Designer album or like Good Music compilation part 2?
Yeah, maybe that.
Cruel Winter.
Yes, right.
Oh, yeah. No.
We can only hope. Cruel Winter.
Yeah, I wonder about that because there is this way in which Designer's used where it does feel, I think you said this before we started recording, where it's like, or maybe you did, where it's like, did they just sign Designer just so they can make this song, basically?
Right.
And, like, you wonder, and, like, look, for all I know, Designer's got 30 great songs in the can. Like,
right,
I have no idea.
Right.
Like, that could happen. Like, if they're all this, then I don't know. Then maybe you want to be a cruel winner.
I think there's some artists that you can look at, and you know that they're fans the way that you're a fan, too. You know what I mean? So it's like, those guys, like, it's so easy to imagine in the same way that, like, you'll find a song on SoundCloud and you and your six friends will be, like, obsessed with it, like, mm-hmm. and can't stop talking about it. Like, this, anyone who came across Designer, Panda, Kanye West included, is going to spend 2 days like, what is this song? This right. is amazing. We just don't put out albums the next month and have right. the opportunity to, like, take that song and put it on our record. You know what I mean?
But so, we,
like,
could see that backfire,
like,
also.
You know, like, I think there's, yeah. like, a fandom element there. It's just, like, this is just, like, I know you're going to like this as much as I did.
But then you see someone like Drake who does a similar thing, and
it is a very Drake move.
Not everybody is always cool with it mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
Right. I mean, it is a very Drake move. And you also wonder, like, is it cannibalizing? Panda could have been... I don't know about top 10.
I don't know
writer.
If it is
cannibalizing Future.
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously.
Is the Drake comparison, like, what, to Drum? Is that the Drake comparison? Or what? Or to
Conan. Or, you know, okay, to Future. Mm. You know, to any yeah. of, like, the hundreds of guys. Mm. Migos, you know, to any of those things. I mean, either.
Quentin Miller.
Hey, give us a call. Although what's different in those Drake situations is Drake will more often than not hop on their records and give them a boost, where Kanye is just like, no, all Designer is belong to me.
Okay, but while we're talking about the behind-the-curtain stuff, can we talk about Chance the Rapper? Chance the Rapper and Ty Dolla $ign, that sort of feels like the creative core of the life of Pablo. When, I think a year ago, when Kanye dropped All Day, my assumption was like, okay, we're going to get a Travis Scott-centric Kanye West album. And that's very much what this thing is not now.
Well, we dodged a bullet,
yeah,
barely.
That's,
so there's that.
But why do we think, like, why did that happen, do you think?
I mean, I think, let's talk about fatherhood. I do think part of it is about fatherhood. I think this spirituality has a lot to do with Kanye's... I mean, he keeps talking about being the happiest he's ever been. I mean, who knows if that's true? There was also a piece I read today about talking how this is, like, about this, all the sex on this record is basically indicating of him being unhappy in his marriage. I mean, obviously, who knows? But if he really is, in fact, ultralight beaming, I mean, like, why wouldn't? Like, you wouldn't go with Travis Scott, who's just, like a nihilist and, like, an unoriginal, like, mostly unoriginal nihilist. But you would go with Chance the Rapper.
Also a new father.
Oh,
is also it, yeah. Chicago.
Right, oh, right, daughter. You can't like see it. You can't see her.
Like, see
her. Yeah, yeah, very true.
I think a lot of Chance on the record, especially on the intro, and the way that he just sort of like sets it off is like, you know, he props Kanye up. He's like the quintessential like Kanye West fan. Like, I Love Kanye is like about Chance, or like about like that kind of kid. You know what I mean? And so I think there was a bit of like that. That was a bit of the olive branch, or like the acknowledgement of like, I know how the kids feel
about me.
That know yeah. late and that love, mm-hmm. you know, these certain bars that Chance sort of reworked. Like, I know what that kind of fandom is, and I sympathize with it. It reminded me of hearing like Lupe on Touch the Sky, and mm-hmm. it was like, oh, okay, like yep. this is like the verse for like the kid who is what Kanye like hoped would exist when he sort of like broke through.
I think that's great.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like if Chance, like if everything in Chance's career has like led up to like this moment, then like he did exactly like what he was supposed to do on that record. You know what I mean?
I think it's a great point. I mean, I think Chance doesn't exist without Kanye in a way that Travis maybe does exist without mm-hmm. Kanye. And mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. that's actually a really valuable takeaway, because when you look at this sort of wave of Kendrick, Chance, Cole, like people like that, like who we've talked about a lot over the last year or two, they're not children of Drake. I mean, we spend a lot of time in the mainstream obsessing about children of Drake, and these people are most assuredly not children of Drake.
Yeah.
These are rappers who are grappling with the same anxieties that Kanye put front and center in like 04 and 05. And that's something that at the time seemed super radical and now has become the sort of default text of an entire generation of rappers. And Chance is, I think, very much that. I mean, that verse, I mean, look, maybe I'm old and getting to a point where like rap verses don't excite me very much anymore, but like that verse blew my mind, and I don't have my mind blown very often, and that mm-hmm. that verse blew my mind. It's so technically precise, and it's so emotionally felt, and also it's a little bit of a coming on someone else's song and eating. It's like, this is my part, nobody else speak. I mean, you're saying this on a Kanye West record,
but while honoring him at the same time.
Yes. Right.
It's gratifying, right. Also because the verse could end a couple different times, and Chance keeps going. And it's so satisfying.
And if he didn't flip those Kanye lines, it may have been more sort of like, you know, insurgent style. But it's reverent. It's very reverent.
In a way, it reminded me of when Kendrick was on the Drake record. And there's this moment where you're like, oh, Kendrick is being nice to Drake, but Kendrick is here to let you know, like, I'm going to eat everybody. Yeah. And Chance has a much more edible relationship with Kanye, I imagine, than Kendrick and Drake has. Because the Kendrick verse is also basically like, nah, Drake, you're not the guy. Like, you're not the one. Like, your path is not the path. Whereas Chance understands that, like, that path is exactly, Kanye's path, exactly the thing that led it for him. What do you guys, speaking of Chance, what do you guys feel about Waves? Because Waves got thrown on the record very last minute, and I feel like there's a lot of excitement about Waves. It's one of the tracks that leaves me a little bit cold on the record.
I agree with that, but to me, it's starting to grow on me when I listen to it specifically, but it leaves me cold every time I listen to the album straight through.
But do you think that's because you know it was added at the last
minute? No, I don't think any, because at a certain point around the time of the Madison Square Garden performance, I decided to, apart from having to cover this stuff, I decided to try to not grab onto any given tweet and take it too seriously and tried to tune stuff
out. A healthy
out.
Thing to do considering some of these tweets.
Right.
Yes. True.
But to me, my problem with Waves is more like it comes in the middle part of this album where sort of like the momentum sort of spikes and then it sort of hits a slower R&B type gesture where you're like, oh, we had a good thing going here. And Waves sort of punctuates the album in a way that was very frustrating and sludgy to me.
Also, it comes right after I Love Kanye, which is like this moment of
it's very exuberant.
It's exuberant and clarity. It's right, just it's very punchy. Yeah. It's Kanye at like self-aware about being self-aware, and then Waves is like a little bit restrained and a little bit high. It's like high. It's like Waves has good posture. I Love Kanye is like sagging, and like Waves has really good posture, and like that's it just feels wrong. And then I feel the same way about the first half of FML until the weekend comes in and kind of like cuts it to me. Like, I feel like the first half, I'm just like, I don't know where this is going, and then the weekend comes in, and I'm like, oh, okay, we're back to like texture.
But it's the FML, I feel like, is sort of conceptual centerpiece in a way where he's really laying out for you, like, I love my family, but I also love how I used to live, and that's the struggle.
That hook
that we're
really
hearing
is like the kernel, I feel like, of the whole record, probably.
And again, it's the type of thing where Kanye would do it himself if he could, but like if you could have The Weeknd do it, why wouldn't you have The Weeknd do it? Let's talk about the sort of mutability of the album, because again, it's like we're here talking about this thing that's maybe even not even a fixed product. Does that does that stress you guys out? It stresses me out a little bit, especially in this age of I have to have my review up in 12 hours. I feel like I want to like go write a second review because things are changing and because my approach to it is changing.
I don't think that's a horrible idea.
Great. Okay, cool. Thanks. Awesome. I got to go, guys. I don't know.
I feel like, you know, as a fan, I would love to own a physical copy of the album. And now it's like I don't even really know what that
would mean
at this point. At
I was
all
told,
what that would
I was
mean,
told
you know?
They're in talks. It's in the works.
Right.
We'll
like,
see.
Right. Like, you
like,
know.
What would that even mean? Like,
even like Yeezus, it was like the physical product of it was like unlike any other like physical CD that you were going to buy. So, like, leading up to this whole thing, I was like, oh, this is going to be like dope. Like, I'm going to have like 20 copies of like this new Kanye album. I'm just going to ask everybody to get me this album for my birthday and it's going to be
alternate
great.
Alternate cover.
Like, well, seriously. Like, but, and then, so that's the only place where I'm kind of like, you know, oh, that's like, it's kind of unfortunate that, like, in this environment, like, as an artist, you're probably not really incentivized to create physicals or have that be sort of your top priority. But then, you know, at the same time, like, Kanye was like, everybody go get Tidal. And I was like, okay, Kanye. And now I have Tidal. And so, like, I'm just like, you know what I mean? Like, if there's anyone to create or to endorse any sort of new standard of, like, what things will look like, or at least in rap in our space or whatever, like in as sort of digital products, like it's him, you know. So
right. Although I would also be like very happily pay $49 for like the Ill Pablo box set with like the t-shirt and like it's sized raw. It's like, remember Justin when we went to the K-Con?
Yes, I do.
So if you go to the K-pop convention and you go to the merch table, literally every album is the wrong size. Like, there's like CD sizes, and then there's like 6x8, 7x11. Like, there's nothing that's the right size. Like, if you put them all on a shelf, it would look wrong.
Yeah.
I would buy something from Kanye that was like that. That was like 14 inches right. by like 17 inches and 3 inches thick.
And I think that should happen for the fans. Right. And I think it might. Mm-hmm. I think if he doesn't get distracted by the next project, that could still happen. But I also like that there's something about this album that's a little bit like choose your own adventure. Like we were saying about the track list. Like if I want to put it on my phone, Ultra Light Beam to Wolves, and just never live with it any other way. Like, I can do that.
Right.
And we can all sort of make our own decisions.
Joe, you were talking about the album cover art. And in my iTunes library, I don't even have the actual.
You're still on iTunes. That makes
no,
sense.
No, well, right, yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't tell you how I got there, yeah. right? But there's an artist named Brandon Cartier. And I remember the night after MSG, when I was writing about the live show, there were a few people on Twitter complaining about the cover design. Some people spent a couple of hours making alternative cover designs, mm-hmm. and this guy, Brandon Cartier, made movie theater awning lettering spelling out the life of Pablo, and the background is black.
Okay.
And I was like, I really love the design of this. So I was just like, I slapped that on there. But to me, it's, you know, the fact that the album's not a constant, right? It's just this variable piece of music. Mm-hmm. I find that kind of exciting. Like, I know people sort of once reviews of the album started going up right after Madison Square, I know I noticed a lot of people saying, you know, well, we don't know what the final version of this thing is. How can we write about it? How can you have an opinion about it? And I'm like, no, that's exciting. It's mm-hmm. exciting to be like, okay, we're at Madison Square Garden. Kanye West is playing this album off of his laptop and seems like he skipped songs that you were sure were going to be on the album. And then he plays a Young Thug song and then he goes back and plays Fade. Mm-hmm. I found that really exciting to write about as a writer. And mm-hmm. I find that really exciting just as a fan of Kanye West to have to grapple with the fact. With how dramatic this guy is.
And also, like, when was the last album that came out that you wanted to interact with right. in multiple time frames mm-hmm. from multiple angles? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just not something. Like, even if this exact same rollout had happened from, I don't know, some rapper who I wouldn't name, but like some other rapper, like we'd all just be like, you know, like Wiz Khalifa.
I mean, yeah. Compared to Rihanna, like Rihanna's rollout, whatever you could say, was also very sort of like scattershot and had all these sort of whatever different moments to them, different formats, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it was the same energy as this. I don't know that it felt like, oh man, like Rihanna is like shifting a sort of like paradigm for like how you put albums out. I think it just felt like this doesn't feel like there's like a passion behind it.
It felt irritating and logistical.
Yeah, you know, like you can tell when someone's logistics. Like, where it's like this is changing because the person can't stomach the idea of it.
And also, it's tactile creativity. And that's actually where the Twitter is so interesting because it's like, look, Kanye can't, I mean, I guess he could Periscope every time he's in the studio fixing something. But instead of Periscoping, what he's doing is he's tweeting. Mm-hmm. And it literally, you almost feel it in your fingertips every time. Like I have, inspired by Joe, I now have notifications on for every time Kanye tweets. And so every time I get a text or I get a notification.
You essentially get texts from him.
Yes.
I recommend it. Right.
Yeah, oh my God.
I recommend it.
Oh my God.
It's been a stressful few weeks.
It has.
But
horrible.
But what a gift it's been. Because like sometimes I'll get like five in a row and I'll be like, oh man, who's texting me 5 times in a row?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God,
Kanye
West,
right.
Mr. West. Oh my God. Hey, what do you got? What's going on? But it's you feel the energy and the kind of the volatility of it. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think you don't want to be that person that's like, oh, it's gone from music. But like it's gone
from
music.
But we're unlearning how to listen to an album, right? Mm-hmm. Like in the same way, you know, it used to be we got a single and then by the time you heard the album, you were sick of the single. So maybe you skipped it. Like that was maybe our youth. Like people before us had side A and side B and that was like a whole other thing. And then, you know, the Beyonce album, it's all straight. It's all videos. Like, it's just there's so many different versions of what an album is today. Mm-hmm. And Kanye, as he does with most things, is taking it further than everyone else.
Let's talk about Famous for a second. The room gets quiet.
Great song. I think it's a great song.
Matthew?
Great song.
Joe?
I'm mixed. I think it's good.
Yeah.
I wish Cameron was on it.
Okay.
Oh. That would have been awesome.
Oh.
But, yeah.
That'd be fire.
I have a weird question about this song.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. The line made Taylor Swift famous. Yeah. I made that bitch famous. The idea of that, right? Like, no, Kanye West, you didn't. Taylor Swift was always famous. She made her own. She did her own thing, right? Okay. All right. This is crazy, right? This is weird. 2008, 2009, right? Like, pre-VMA thing, right? When I think about, like, what I was aware of just, like, in listening to music at that time, like, Katy Perry and Taylor Swift were both very visible female voices in, like, pop at that level, mm-hmm. right? They were, like, top 10 Hot 100, right?
Taylor was not.
Or, well, I mean, she was, like,
she was just starting.
Katy Perry, on the other hand, had Hot and Cold and I Kissed a Girl, mm-hmm. and she looked like Katy Perry looks, and she was very much like, I'm here, like, I'm famous. Right now, like, right? Like, if Kanye disses Katy Perry at the VMAs instead of Taylor Swift, do we exist in a different future right now? Wow. Is Taylor Swift as visible as she is right now? Because that lyric is like, it's such a weird That's, thing to wrap your head around.
Oh my God.
But Katy Perry isn't really.
It's like an episode of Black Mirror.
She isn't really famous. Relevant, extremely on right now, and Taylor Swift is partly because
also like let's
I don't know
no,
I don't
no.
know
and I'm gonna help. Here's the thing, I'm gonna make that place safe for you to be in.
Thank you.
I'm gonna come and sit next Thank to you, you in that place. Because let's talk about the VMAs in 2008.
Nine.
Anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Right. 2009 VMAs. An interesting thing that was happening with Taylor at that time of her career was, I imagine, behind the scenes, there was this long con of putting her in the pop space. And pop radio had just begun to play her. But she was being marketed, I would say, 95 to 100% as a country
artist. She still had a guitar.
Very much. She still – that was like – if you think of the dress she was wearing, that was like one of her first like real red carpet looks that she was wearing. That moment, I remember as a critic thinking – this is a real, I don't know what's happening behind the scenes here, but this is a very, very interesting move on MTV's part to basically reach out and pull Taylor towards them.
Absolutely.
And I don't know. I mean, look, all these things are manufactured to some degree. Like, I'm sure there's some collusion or collaboration behind the scenes. But the symbolic weight of MTV pulling Taylor in before Kanye jumps on that stage,
right?
That in and of itself tells you where Taylor was at that moment.
Right.
She was not just a country star, but she was definitely not a pop affirmed person.
And they were also easing her in. Do you know who won Video of the Year at that VMAs?
No.
Beyonce.
There you go.
Taylor won Female Video
right.
of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like her, it was her
soft
entry.
It was a soft landing.
It was a soft
landing.
When Kanye said, I mean, you know, you split out the part where it's misogynist or it treats Taylor as a sex object. You strip that part away. Is there a part where that transactional, that moment,
right.
or rather that emotional moment, was actually a transactional moment?
Right.
And I do think, because I actually remember at that time people saying to me, I didn't know who that girl was.
Of course, right. And it's like, it's not to take away from anyone's accomplishments in any way.
No.
But a lot of what, you know, Kanye talks about is the record, the public record in history and revisionist history and how and context and really thinking about what was really going on in that moment at that time, like what was really popular and who was really aware of what, you know? And that may be sort of sometimes it's like if you're talking about the wrong thing, it can come across as shallow or it can come across as sort of like self-centered. But at the same time, it's like, why would someone in his position risk so much to like put that statement on record? Like, you
and
guys aren't going to forget.
But,
like, you know?
But I'd say the counterpoint to that, and it's maybe
yeah,
a
I'm
general.
Sure there is one.
No. I feel like the question I have is why is it worth it litigating sort of the merits of the case, right? Because it's sort of Kanye is this guy who, whether you're talking about the lyrics about Taylor Swift on the record, whether you're talking about the lyrics about presumably about Alexa, his ex, on 30 Hours, whether you're talking about his tweets about Amber Rose, it's like Kanye is this guy who gets marred in the past and wants to. He seems like a guy who probably spends a lot of time thinking back to how he would have relived high school. And
who comes up with like a retort to something that someone said to him.
Yeah,
like,
it's
like
very
a year
weird
ago.
And it's very spiteful. And I think that's what makes it difficult to to digest the lyrics about Taylor Swift on Famous, regardless of whether
she cleared
the merits of the case.
But also forget the merits of the case. Like, what if she cleared? Like, here's the thing. There's
right.
I feel like there's real fuzziness right now because you have competing narratives. You have Kanye insisting he ran the lyric by her or some version of the lyric by her, and Taylor's people saying that never happened. And, you know, I'm actually in a weird way very moved by the backstage rant at SNL where, like, almost as an aside, Kanye's like, Taylor, fake.
Right.
And it's like, that's not even what he's talking about, but it's like he's just so angry about a lot of stuff that one of the things that he's organically, authentically angry about is the perceived fakeness of Taylor Swift.
And his grudges and his fixation on the past, like, it's part of
it's so Kanye. Kanye.
Sure, it's so Kanye.
But yeah, I mean, so there's
doesn't make it right, but it's real.
But I think, Justin, you're right in saying, okay, maybe we don't have to litigate the merits of the charge, but we do have to litigate the merits of the song or the merits of the bars. Are those two things divisible? Can the case have no merit, but the bars do have merit? Can the case have a lot of merit, but the bars have no merit?
Well, to me, I guess the way I think about Famous is I think about the tweet that Kanye sent where he talked about, look, I just want to restore the DMX feeling. But the thing is, DMX wouldn't have cared. Like, that's what makes Kanye seem like he wants to have it both ways. Like, DMX wouldn't backtrack and try to explain the publicist relationships that enabled him to use the... Like, the real DMX feeling is saying that on a song, having it go platinum, and being like, I'm DMX.
Right. And never discussing it.
And Kanye wants to sort of micromanage his perception in a way that's very much not the DMX feeling.
Isn't it Kanye West delivering a Kanye West in quotes lyric? Like, that's like,
sure,
when
but
I
he has
to
be a knight of faith about it. He has to step back and just accept that, like, Taylor Swift is this white woman. She's a huge pop star. He said what he said. He thinks he's right for saying it. I don't know. I think that's where it ends.
Is it different to you than, like, say, when Eminem was taking on Christina Aguilera?
I think very different. I think so.
Tell me.
M was just like, he was trolling, not to just use, that's like a lazy word to use, but he was just, it was like Fred Durst and Christina Aguilera and those people were just on television. So
it was
he
equal
said
opportunity.
Funny things about them.
Yeah,
it was
anyone.
Like South Park, like whoever's on, that's who I'm going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
The context of the lyric is like, for all my South Side niggas that know me best, right? So that establishes two things. Like, one, I'm the person in mind when I say this
right.
in my brain
mm-hmm.
is one from the place that I'm from. And two, they know my heart.
And
right?
it's been
Those
divorced
are
from that context a
lyrics,
lot.
Right?
And I think that's an important point.
So absolutely. when you think about, like, when you picture that message being delivered to a person in a specific place that knows exactly who Kanye West is, then you're like, oh, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? When you divorce it from that context, then it's like, why does this crazy man keep bringing up all these old things
mm-hmm.
in a way, you know?
But that intro, that introducing line, I wonder if that introducing line actually could apply to every Kanye West song. And like, that's the thing. Like, why does it have to be specifically about this Taylor
line? Because sometimes
line?
He is speaking to America and not to the South Side.
Right. But he also knows that, like, even if you're speaking to the South Side, he's putting this on, well, he's speaking, I'm putting it on Tidal, so who knows really who's listening to it. But, like, you know, he's putting it out for the world. And I think, and again, like, who knows? Like, Kanye didn't do any press this time around. Like, nobody got to ask him these questions any real way. But I feel like to be friends with Taylor is, like, a very straightforward enterprise. To be friends with Kanye is probably a bit of a meta enterprise. And so I would imagine through Kanye's lens, he understands himself and, like, being friends with Kanye means you might have to be in a lyric like this.
A liability friend.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's part of being in the Kanye West universe, whereas being in Taylor Swift's universe does not involves protection, involves safety, it involves secrecy.
Nice
it involves,
Instagram on your birthday.
Yes, it involves intimacy, and it involves protection, basically. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Kanye, it's like you're fair game. Mm-hmm. And that's could be fair game for anybody. Kim's fair game on this. I mean, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, we were talking about there being basically.
She's a good sport. Can we all agree on
that? Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's Kim. I mean, I assume the sex tape on the stolen laptop is a Kim sex tape. I mean, is that what we think it is? I mean, at minimum, there's Ray J lines. Like, there's basically, like, if you are in the Kanye blast zone, like, this is what comes with it. Right. And I think Kanye and Taylor's ideas of friendship, whatever you think of the lyric, whatever you think of the misogynist or non-misogynist views of the lyric, their ideas of friendship are two totally different things. Because this is coming from...
It's not meant to be honest.
No, I mean, this is coming from two people who, like, 6 months ago, Kanye was like, maybe I'll executive produce a record for her. But I think in Kanye's mind, executive producing a record for her does not exclude, I'm going to rap.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that line on this record. If anything, it's going to help you. And I think Taylor does not understand her friends as such.
Because she doesn't listen to enough rap. If she listened to more rap, she'd understand the dynamics of all of this.
Speaking of friends, let's talk a little bit about 30 Hours. You saw Kanye tweeted today about Drake just coming through the studio. No strings. You know, just rolling
helping
through.
Helping him out.
Just helping him out. Just buddies. I obviously didn't know that Drake was... part of 30 Hours, but now that I know that, it makes a tremendous amount of sense.
Wait, you think so? Why?
To me, the hook feels very Drakey.
The whole song feels very Rick Rossy to me. The whole
30 Hours,
the flow, the flow of the song is very like, I'm in my Maybach, so I'm like, it's very like, I want to go back and drop Rick Ross grunts all over 30 Hours.
Amazing.
And like have the jingling Maybach chain. That's what it sounds like to me.
What do you feel about the sort of anxiety of influence between Kanye and Drake? Because I feel like this Yeezus really, but this album especially, is the first album where I don't feel Yeezus feels like Kanye's complete rejection of the sort of like post-808s, post-Drake universe that he left behind. This album doesn't feel like it has any, even though Drake's on it, doesn't feel like it has anything to do with Drake. It feels like a completely separate proposition. It's the first album where I was basically like Kanye. I mean, I think I wrote some version of this where I was like, Kanye's only kind of measuring himself against his own whatever level he is at. He's not paying a lot of attention except to Designer, of all people.
I mean, I think if Drake and 40 were one man, then it would be comparable. But it's just like Kanye is a musician on a level that Drake never was and doesn't necessarily want to be because he has that
or
man.
Or have to be
because he has it in somebody else. So it's more collaborative, whereas like Kanye just being the conductor, I just can't compare them in my mind anymore.
Interesting.
I was really confused when Kanye first started, like when he first said like, oh, you know, like it's Drake season, like Drake is the guy now.
Yeah.
I was like, you're kind of, you know, maybe he was getting ahead of it before someone else said it, you know, but I was like, okay.
That's not that DMX feeling.
But we've also seen Kanye give up being on the radio, whereas the radio is Drake hour every hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Kanye is just like, what are these songs is going to be on the radio? Any of them?
Oh, that's hard.
Feedback.
I actually thought about that. Feedback.
I think Highlights could go too.
And well, I mean, here's the thing: if it ends up being 30 hours, then like everybody's lost. Right. Like it shouldn't be 30 hours. Not that I don't like 30 hours, but that's not the reason. But if it's Feedback, or if it's Ultralight Beam,
don't hold your breath.
It's not gonna be Ultralight Beam.
I know. Should we go out listening to Feedback, or should we go out listening to 30 hours?
We should go out listening to 30 hours in the Maybach.
Freestyle 4.
I don't think Jocelyn has enough bleep buttons to do Freestyle 4.
Will we be the life for this whole party?
All right, we're going to go out listening to 30 Hours by Kanye West.
You say they never saw this coming, well, you're not alone. $1 million renovations to a happy home. My ex said she gave me the best years of her life. I saw a recent picture of her, I guess she was right. I wake up, access to the damages. Checking media takeout. Pictures of me drunk walking out with a bitch, but it's blurry enough to get the fake out. I wake up, all veggies, no eggs. I hit the gym, all chest, no legs. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the New York Times podcast. Thank you to my guests, Matthew Trammell, Justin Charity, Joe Coscarelli. You can read any or all of us on Kanye West and any number of people at nytimes.com/music. You can check out the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Audio Boom, anywhere where you get your podcast.
Title.
It's probably on, I mean, hell, it might be on Tidal.
Soon.
TBD, Tidal. Our producer is Jocelyn Gonzalez. Check out our Spotify playlist and come check us out next week.